This podcast is brought to you by Knowledge at Wharton. For more information, please visit knowledge.wharton.upenn.edu.
With tax day right around the corner, many Americans will be dealing with or have dealt with a variety of tax scams. These scams end up costing the government millions of dollars. You may have heard about the one recently in which personal information was taken from a college loan website. That site had to be shut down because of the issue. That was the FAFSA website. But you also have citizens that kind of get into the policy of tweaking their returns to maybe try and boost up their bottom line on their tax return as well. The IRS puts out its quote-unquote dirty dozen list of scams. For you old-time film lovers, you may remember the Dirty Dozen movie back in the 1960s with Jim Brown, who was part of that crew back in the day. Ian Kaminsky is a partner at the firm of Fox Rothschild. He's also chair of international compliance with that firm. He is a Wharton grad, Penn Law grad, and is also an adjunct professor here at the University of Pennsylvania Law School, teaching a course here at the school. And he also has a book coming out this June, Tax Fraud and Evasion. And great to have Ian here in the studio with us. Nice to meet you.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Just being a couple of days now away from the actual filing day, and a lot of people are making, which is April 18th this year, so you get a little bit of a grace period normal. How much of a concern are scams, whether they're coming from outside actors or the people themselves, maybe, as I said, tweaking their returns?
Well, let me just step back for one quick second. When somebody gets them, it's usually past a tweak.
Okay, yeah.
A tweak is, you know, you take a little aggressive position on a deduction. My practice is the other side of tweaking, when the IRS actually comes after you. But each year the IRS puts out this dirty dozen. And the scams this year are a combination. They've actually tweaked that, to use your term. And they've changed. And this year it's a combination of how people can get taken advantage of, as well as how people could try to take advantage of the IRS. So they ran it both ways. For instance, I've had a couple of these. One is a phone scam, which is still going around.
Yeah, yeah.
The IRS doesn't call you on the phone.
Never.
Right.
Ever.
If they call you on the phone, it's not them. But I've had in the last 60 days, I've had a number of calls where clients have gotten purported calls from the IRS, and they're told, you owe us money. If you don't pay us the money now, we're sending somebody out to your house to arrest you.
Yeah.
And give us your credit card information now.
Yeah.
And some do and some don't. If they're smart, they don't. And they call a professional up who will tell them it's a scam. But who knows how much money they're making.
What about via email? The same type of thing.
The IRS can fax you. And they send you letters. At worst, because I'm registered, I can get a fax letter. But otherwise, you just get a letter.
Right.
You don't get a phone call, and you don't get an email say, pay me $5,000. You don't get that either. I'm in a little different position because of the practice. So once in a while, I will get a fax. But for the audience out there, it's unlikely you're going to get a fax. And if you get an email saying, send me money, you owe us money, it's not real.
And because of that, identity theft is still a major concern
out
there.
It's huge. Now, they're doing better. They've spent a lot of resources. They've taken a lot of their criminal investigation resources, which are scarce, and put it into identity theft. And the identity theft numbers are coming down.
Right.
The other major deterrent is if you get convicted of identity theft, you get what's called a consecutive sentence. So if you would get 2 years otherwise, you get 2 years plus, say, an additional 2 years that can't run together. That's a fair deterrent. I have a section of that I cover in the treatise. So if you get a two-year sentence, you'd normally get 2 years together. Now you get 4 years. That's a deterrent. And between the computer center being able to stop patterns that look funny or look phony, which has helped, and the amount of resources they're putting in, it's not under control, but it's down significantly.
But it's still I don't want to say a sector, but it kind of ends up being one where, I mean, we're talking about millions and millions of dollars every year that is being stolen because of a variety of these range of scams.
And the problem on the other side is, of course, I have a couple of those now. And the trouble is, after your identity has been stolen, even to try to get a return into the system is a major, it's just a major headache.
Yeah.
The special forms you have to fill out. I'm working on one now. I'm still trying to figure out how we're going to get the return in for the years where the identity was stolen. Because the phony returns are phony returns, and the taxpayer has to get real returns in for those years.
It just does go back to the point where people really have to be even more aware now than ever. Even if identity theft is being handled a little bit better by the government, that you do have to take as many lengths as you possibly can to make sure you're protecting your identity and in every way possible.
Yeah, it's not good to get a letter from the IRS saying we've denied your refund, and they're usually nominal amounts. It could be $1,000, $2,000.
Right.
Because we've decided it's a phony return, you may want to check in with us.
Yeah.
It's not the best way to start the morning.
Yeah. Well, I mean, how many of those are still happening these days? I mean, probably thousands of them a year.
Those statistics, they're probably buried somewhere in their data they issue. That I haven't seen, but they have publicized that it's going down. On the other side, I have a couple now where fairly sophisticated individuals had their identity stolen anyway.
Right.
And to get them back into the system is just a nightmare, just a nightmare.
This Dirty Dozen list, which is interesting because, as you said, it covers a wide range of potential topics. And a couple of them I wanted to bring up. One, which is claiming a fake charity on your return, which, how many people think about that in the course of doing their return? I mean, is it more of a personal returns, or is it on the corporate returns?
I've seen it on the personal. Again, the corporations have a little more sophistication in terms of evaluating who they're dealing with.
Right.
And I've seen it more on the personal side. Just give me some money, you give them some money. Now, there's a lot of good causes. There's plenty of people to give money to. But a fake charity, you have to do some due diligence before you start, especially if they're asking you, if it's more, if it's $10, it's one thing. A significant amount of money, is another thing. So that I'm not seeing. They put it on the list, but that I haven't seen quite as much of. I can see how it could happen, but I haven't seen that one in my personal practice.
Another one that is brought up on this list is tax preparers.
Yeah. That I've seen a lot of.
Boosting the bottom line on what the final number you get back from the government is.
Look, that's been going on for years. A couple basic points there. One, if you go to a tax preparer and he says, just give me your income and I'll give you a return. That's not the right person.
That should throw up a big yellow flag right there.
Forget yellow. We're past red. But, you see that. Just give me your income. I do the same thing for everybody. In effect, I'll guarantee you a refund.
Yeah.
So and over the years, I've done a lot of tax preparer defense. And there's all sorts of crazy things going on. I'll just give you one that came to mind coming out this morning. Years ago, I represented an accountant at a military base. He was doing 3,000 returns for soldiers,
all the service
soldiers,
people,
soldiers, yeah. People.
Yeah.
Every return had a home office deduction.
Think about that
one for a second.
Yeah, yeah.
Number one, they don't have offices, and two, how do you have a home office deduction?
Right. Yeah.
But if you go to look, some of the stuff is just common sense. If you get back from your accountant, make up a number of 5,000 of charitable deductions, and you didn't give the accountant receipts for $5,000, and you didn't give $5,000 to charity, you might want to pause on that. If you get a return with a earned income tax credit deduction based on having three kids, and you don't have three kids, you might want to pause on that.
Yeah.
But that's been going on for years, and it's still going on. And they with the advance refund claims, they take a percentage of what you get back as a refund.
Yeah.
So they have an incentive, and you have an incentive, but you got to stop the incentive.
Is anything being done to try and address that from the government perspective towards a lot of these tax prep services?
Yeah, they do. They bring – look, every once in a while there's a major case involving a tax preparer service. This year they've been working more on pure employment tax fraud, where you're supposed to be turning money over, it's similar, but you're turning money over, supposed to go to the IRS, and never gets there.
Right.
So they've been spending a lot of resources on employment tax fraud this year. There have been some return preparer frauds, and the trouble is it's another deterrent area, because if you have a return preparer, he's not doing five returns. You're doing thousands and thousands of returns.
Yeah.
And they estimate for sentencing how much money you cheated. on those thousands and thousands of returns. So they'll do an audit. They'll actually audit, make up a number, 10 taxpayers.
Right.
And they figure out of the 10 taxpayers, 50% of the deductions were phony. And then they'll extrapolate that to your other 2,950 returns, and you get tremendous sentences.
Yeah.
So the ones they do bring – and look, they're short of enforcement resources, as you've been reading.
Yeah.
They've been cutting IRS resources every year. But the ones they've been bringing, they get a lot. They get a lot of bang for that buck, and they just need to bring more of the cases.
Ian Kaminsky is a partner at the firm of Fox Rothschild here in Philadelphia. Your comments welcome at 844-WHARTON if you'd like, 844-942-7866. Or if you can't get to your phone, you're more than welcome to send us a comment via Twitter, either at BizRadio111 or my Twitter account, which is at DanLoney21. Let's flip to the business side of things for a second. What are some of the things that businesses should be very wary of that the IRS is starting to really be focusing on?
Look, there's been a whole different show.
Yeah.
We'll do a minute or so.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of publicity, obviously, on inversions.
Yeah.
The Trump administration is trying to stop back. An inversion is where you move the corporate situs offshore to try to limit your taxes. There was a raid on a publicly traded corporation a month ago in the United States. You know, it's on the New York Stock Exchange for moving income offshore. There had been a Senate report previously where this company supposedly had virtual inventory.
Yeah.
That one's virtual inventory.
Right.
The idea was that the parts would be sold outside the United States, so it wouldn't be U.S. sourced income.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it seemed to me, skim the report. It seems to me it's tough to do that with virtual inventory.
Yeah. You're
not deciding where the inventory is to sell the part to start with. So that's going on. They're doing a lot of transfer pricing on a high level where they think you're chiseling the U.S. as opposed to a foreign country. And they've just started – there's a whole – this isn't one of the dirty dozen for the year. They're picked up micro-captive insurance companies, where somebody convinces you to set up your own insurance company based on a theoretical claim which will never occur, where you get a deduction, then you park the money, you don't pay taxes on it. Any of those problems, you can call me after the program's over.
Well, one of the things I saw on this list involved abusive tax shelters, correct?
And that's still going on.
Yeah.
That's still going on. I just gave you a couple of them.
Yeah.
But the one they're really focusing – look, there's a couple they're focusing on. Back to the publicly traded company, there had never been a criminal transfer pricing case because you have experts and they're supposed to be evaluating what the price should be in one jurisdiction as opposed to another.
Yeah.
So if this goes ahead based on this raid from a month ago, that's a whole new world. The micro captives is just the latest in a set of scams, so to speak, where you're trying to evade taxes. Look, there's been stuff for years. There was in the 2000s. There were people buying – there was a technical ability where you'd buy options. And the making money piece of the option would never work.
Yeah.
And the losing money piece of the option would always work.
Sure, yeah.
And then you'd offset whatever your capital gains were in the dot-com bubble when people were making millions and millions of dollars and they needed offsets. That went on for 5 or 6 years. And that went down because they indicted people and they convicted people and they convicted a couple of accounting firms. And some of the principles, and then that went away. But it's limited by creativity. As long as you have a code which is 6 inches high and 2 volumes, where the print I can't even read with my glasses on half the time, you're going to have something out there where people are going to try something new. Now, maybe the new administration is going to simplify, but that's going to need a lot of simplification.
Well, and that brings us into something I wanted to ask you about anyway, because obviously there's been a lot of talk in the media about what is going to happen with the tax code, what is going to be the potential new tax rate for corporations in the United States. Are we going to see kind of a repatriation day period where companies will be able to bring a lot of that money offshore? What are some of the things that you are hearing that are being discussed right now? Corporately, I know they're talking maybe 15%, maybe 20%.
Probably a little higher than 15 now.
Okay.
Look, after the Obamacare repeal didn't go anywhere, that was some of the money they were going to use for tax reform.
Right.
So they're back. I don't know if they're at step one. You know, I'm reading – I'm not down in the administration. I'm reading what you're reading.
Yeah.
The public stuff for individuals would reduce the maximum rate from 39.5 to 33. And excuse me, at the same time, they thought that the Obamacare surcharge was what they call it. The extra, 4% would go away.
Right.
So that hasn't gone away. They still could reduce 39 to 33 on the individual level. The more interesting issue is Some of the proposals had talked about reducing pass-through income down to the corporate rate, i.e. partnerships.
Okay.
And taking – so if you're going to reduce the corporate rate, maybe you don't get the 15 now. Maybe you get the 20.
Right.
If I start wiretapping conversations in Washington, we can come back again. I'll give you a better view. But say it's 20. But if you reduce pass-throughs, you're going to have a tremendous budget deficit.
Yeah.
It is going to increase it that much dramatically,
yep.
And you're going to have to and you're going to need offsets for some of it. So the only way you get offsets is you cut deductions, or you phase out exemptions,
yep.
Or you go to what people don't want to give up, or mortgage interest deductions, charitable contribution deductions. You have to start getting into there. And you have to have more enforcement to at least make sure you're collecting the lesser percentage. You got to collect it. Now, the bills that have been introduced so far have been fascinating. I'll take a minute on that. One bill is to get rid of the estate and gift tax.
Yes.
They keep talking about that. The death tax. So that's a couple bills which have been introduced. Then there's been a couple bills just to repeal the entire Internal Revenue Code. That's okay. One proposed putting in a national sales tax. Don't know if that works, but that was a proposal. The one that was most interesting was to repeal the entire code and then put in something new in 2021. There was a little gap between 2017 and 2021 about what you're going to do for the next 4 years. I don't know if that congressman thought that one through carefully enough before he introduced the bill.
Because it's not like turning on a light switch.
Right.
I mean, you can't just go from one to the other in the span of an hour.
Right. And it wasn't clear what was going to happen between this year and 2021, but I assume that I have to get fleshed out in committee. So that's floating around. Look, they were talking about first before the summer recess. Now they're talking about after the summer recess.
Yeah.
As the president has said recently, they're complicated areas. And we'll see what they – the thing they could do quickly, if you wanted to do something quickly, you could just cut the tax rate some percentage.
Yeah.
That you could do. That you don't need a lot of study on. You need some study on how much money you're going to lose.
Right.
But that you could go from 39 to 33. You could cut corporate from where it is now to 25 without any other adjustments. And maybe you could live with that for a year or two to get something more robust or more careful tax reform.
We're joined in studio by Ian Kaminsky of Fox Rothschild. Your comments welcome at 844-WHARTON, 844-942-7866 is the number. If you can't get to your phone, you can send us a comment via Twitter, either at BizRadio111 or my Twitter account, which is at DanLoney21. One of the other interesting things that was on that Dirty Dozen list involved falsifying income, which I find it interesting that and I guess to a degree with more and more people kind of working for themselves, freelance work, whatever it might be, the potential to falsify income has, I guess, a little bit of a greater opportunity of being there. But still, for a majority of Americans, it's very hard to falsify what comes to you on a W-2
right.
or a 1099.
It's impossible to falsify a debt. Well, that's not true. There is actually something going on out there. I won't get too detailed. I don't want to give anybody ideas.
I was going to say,
how-to.
Wait a minute.
We're not a how-to. We're not doing how-tos. But you can there is a group out there which is creating false information reporting forms, which show that you have income and have had withholding, and you then report, then you state that you over withheld, and you try to get a refund.
Right.
So that's going on, but yeah, look, so small businesses, cash businesses, businesses which where you're not getting not getting W-2, you're not getting 1099s into you, that's been going on forever.
Yeah.
That's been going on forever. That hasn't changed. What has changed is the audit rate is down. So the question is whether the IRS is picking up less of it now, or people think they can get away with more. And that they came out with statistics on what's called the tax gap, and the tax gap statistics are up significantly, year over year.
Yeah.
And that you're not going to fix until everybody gets a W-2 or everybody gets a 1099
right.
or you have enough enforcement resources where everybody's concerned.
And that ends up being the key thing. Going back to – we brought this up a couple of times – is the fact that, if you try and call into the IRS because you have a question, you're going to be waiting for a lot of times a half hour. They've tried to improve –
A half hour.
Well, or more. Yes,
yeah.
Exactly. But, the IRS, where it is right now and with some of these potential changes – they do need to have the resources to be able to do that, and that ends up being the big question.
I'll give you one other global example. The other thing that's very hot is they put in a couple years ago a offshore reporting regime for U.S. citizens living all over the world. Because
yeah.
they gathered – it took them 75 years to figure out that the U.S. citizens living offshore may not be compliant. So they passed a statutory framework which requires offshore banks to turn over the names of U.S. citizens and the account balances. And combined with that, there's a EU reporting regime which requires the same thing. There's 101 countries reporting this year.
Right.
So the idea is if the information is coming into the IRS domestically and they'd be getting – you think they'd be getting millions and millions and millions of names.
Sure.
And I attended a program a couple weeks ago where the Criminal Investigation Division has their first set of names from this offshore bank reporting regime. If they have the ability to work them, you would think that would help international compliance dramatically.
Yeah.
They've been running for years. I'll just give you a statistic. They've been running for years a program to have people come in from the cold offshore. So far, since they first ran it, they collected $10 billion. That's, you know, it's real money.
Yeah.
That's $10 billion in one program and another half a billion in another program. So if they have the resources to work through this, it would help substantially. The other thing that's going on is the ability to hide corporate ownership is also going away. The offshore regimes require a drill down on corporate ownership. The U.S. regime requires a drill down to a 10% owner. Now, look, people can lie about anything they want.
Yeah.
But the financial institution is supposed to be doing due diligence. And if they do the due diligence, it ought to help dramatically, which would give the administration room to lower tax rates.
Great meeting you. Thank you very much for coming in today.
Thanks
Greatly
for having
appreciate
me.
Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much. Ian Kaminsky from Fox Rothschild. He is their chair of international compliance and also a partner at the firm.
For more business news and analysis from Knowledge at Wharton, please visit knowledge.wharton.upenn.edu.